Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague. They threw it away. 13 turnovers in the Warriors. Davey on the way. Gets by Durant and throws him in the right hand.
Hello, Oakland.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
He has plenty of time that time and throws a deep bomb. Cooks try to run under it, and it's intercepted. Second of the night by Xavier Howard, his fourth in the last two games.
And that is one of the great interceptions you will see.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, it is 12:03 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080, The Fan. Brandon Sprague still going solo. Andy Dirt Johnson back on Friday. And I'm rocking with my man Joe Fisher today.
What up?
What's up, Joe Fish?
Nothing much. Just restoring some balance to this show. It was two beavers yesterday.
I know, man. We're too biased. We had to even this thing out and get some ducks on the show.
That poll question killed me. Mariota's season has been terrible.
Well, look, I go back to that and... If Dirt was here, we would have done that segment. I would have actually loved to have done the segment with Dirt to get his two cents. We've talked about this off the air because we've been following it for a couple weeks now. Their team is somehow potentially going to make the playoffs, even though they're a road dog to the 3-win 49ers. He's been bad this year. Like, Dirt and I have talked about this off air, so it's just unfortunate he wasn't here. And I'm sure he'll maybe want to bring this back up when he gets back here Friday, but... it's good to have you in today, buddy. It's good to do a radio show with you. Swigard will be back tomorrow, and so we'll get him back in the seat, but we got Joe Fish today. I don't know about you. I was doing some show prep, and my phone keeps going off. And I'm sitting there, and I'm reading this article, and I'm getting annoyed because I'm just, come on, stop texting me. It's a group of friends I have. They know what I'm usually doing around this time, and half the time they do this because they know it annoys me. So I'm getting these text messages from the group, and I'm thinking, okay, they're trying to annoy me. No, what it turns out they're doing is they're jumping on this Bitcoin train.
Oh, no.
And, in fact, they're not jumping on the Bitcoin itself. They're jumping on this thing called Litecoin, which I guess is just like Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy sends me this, hey, I don't know if you know what Litecoin is. It was $97 for one last week. Now it's $340. My other buddy's dad bought a Bitcoin, and... now he's got $200,000 in Bitcoin. It feels like this conversation, especially the last 2 weeks, has just hit peak levels. And I'm just wondering, anybody else out there, how do you feel about the Bitcoin conversation? Like, what's your approach when somebody brings up Bitcoin as a topic? Do you engage? Do you sit back confused? Do you get annoyed maybe? Or do you kind of feel like me, the guy who missed out on Bitcoin... and basically just feels really poor when everybody talks about
it. Yeah, chalk me up to that category as well. I think I saw a tweet last week that said, like, Bitcoins went for 20-something bucks back in 2009 or something, like, very, very cheap. And once I saw that, I just hung my head in shame. It's just like, damn it. There it was, the golden opportunity. I found a golden ticket.
Yeah.
I didn't buy any
of them. Well, that's what it's kind of turned into now because you've got all the... the mainstream media, like all of them, all the networks run these stories on Bitcoin. That's all you hear about is, what do you invest in? Is it Bitcoin? Is it this? And I saw a video about a month ago, and it was this like 18-year-old kid. Like he dropped out of school, by the way, 18 years old. He's got just the sickest downtown apartment in the city he lives in, 18, doesn't have a job, like an actual job. And they did this expose on him, and they basically asked, how did this all happen? And I guess his grandma left him money when she passed. He took some other money that he accumulated from a couple birthdays, who were very generous with the money they gave him. He took all that money against the wishes of his parents, and he bought Bitcoin really early. He's a millionaire now.
God.
He's 18 years old, no high school diploma. He lives in downtown. He bought a Lamborghini with his Bitcoin money, which it's a cryptocurrency. So I'm like, how does that happen? I guess you can find dealers in places that accept it. Just living the life as an 18-year-old with millions of Bitcoin dollars.
And that's why I don't look down on anyone with that didn't get a college degree, because you could somehow end up with Bitcoin and then don't have to go get a college degree because you're a millionaire. That's insane, though. I know there used to be like a Bitcoin kiosk in Pioneer Place Mall where people could do Bitcoin things. I don't know what you do. Like, I guess you just buy them, or like I said, this is obviously why we didn't strike it big with the Bitcoin. We have no idea.
Because we're sitting here really confused.
7 years later, we're like, what the hell is this thing?
Well, I put up a poll question on our Twitter page, and I basically said, people that talk about making money in Bitcoin make you feel what? And I gave four options because that's all you're allowed to. Your options are poor AF, and if you know what AF means, as blank, jealous, annoyed, or you kind of leave going, how does this work?
I think a combination of all four, kind of.
I get it to a certain extent, but I also walk away still confused on certain things. And I'm sure there's a listener or two out there that maybe you hit Bitcoin and you're living the life, or you're still working, but you know you have $100,000 in Bitcoin. I just, the whole narrative, the whole story, the whole cryptocurrency thing, it's taken off to a level where everybody's talking about it and it feels like you can't escape it.
Yeah, it's almost like stages of that conversation. Like when someone says, yeah, I got Bitcoin, you're like, huh, what's that? Start learning about it. And then they tell you what it is and you're still confused, but then they're like, yeah, this was available 8 years ago for pennies, and that makes you kind of angry. And then you realize that people have thousands of dollars off of them, then that makes you feel poor AF.
You know, I might be incorrect in this, but I follow an individual who's really good on NBA stuff. This is a guy who made his career betting NBA. He has a whole metric that he uses that helps him gauge who the favorite is every night, and he bets a ton of money. This dude is a millionaire. He travels the world. He builds houses wherever he wants, living the life, right? He also is a very big cryptocurrency guy, like Bitcoin and stuff. He was tweeting about something called CryptoKitty, and it sounds like it's maybe digital cats. I can't wrap my brain around
like
this.
Like a Tamagotchi or something?
Yes, like a Tamagotchi, except I think people make money on them now.
Can I get it in my Happy Meal?
I don't know, but these are the things we're left to think about as all these other people are out there getting filthy rich on things we haven't heard of or we don't understand. Well, you know, somebody texting into the Bridgeport Pierce text line, never heard of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean,
Google Bitcoin and it will blow your mind.
Yeah.
It's at like, what is it, $1,500 to buy one right now?
I thought it was more. I thought it was like $2,000 or something.
You're right. Maybe it is more.
I don't know. I thought it was like $20,000 maybe. I mean, I have no idea. See, obviously, that's where this conversation comes back to. I have no idea what the hell it is
like
and how much it costs.
There are stories right now, Joe, of people taking out second mortgages to buy this.
Well, that's what you're doing.
I'm not doing that.
I heard you on the phone.
No. I'm in the actual real estate market. I'm not looking in the...
It's what you tell your wife.
Yeah. What
no,
do we need this?
Honey,
what do we need a $350,000 loan for? Oh, yeah. We just, you know, we're going to get a house some point.
What?
After I strike it big with this Bitcoin money and make like $5 million.
Oh, man.
I'm glad that somebody else is a little confused, lost, and feels somewhat... I don't know if dumb is the right word, but just
missed the opportunity.
Yeah,
man.
The missed opportunity.
Just kind of saw that thing back in like 2009, 2010, and I'm like, oh, that's, I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to pay any attention to it, and now here we are.
Well, and you're younger than me, so I'm kind of surprised you didn't start the show saying, dude, I bought like 5 Bitcoins 8 years ago.
Well, that makes me even feel worse now. I'm like, the fact that you expected me to already have some Bitcoins, now I'm really upset with myself.
Yeah, Dusty told me of a story that he was talking with some buddies years back when Bitcoin was, you know, people knew about it, but a lot of people didn't. And he missed an opportunity to invest a certain amount of money because he didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense.
I don't want to miss.
And the story, I get basically, it goes for him that he told me he walked away, he didn't do anything. And years later down the road, some of those same people in that group that had the convo, they did. And now they're millionaires.
All right, now I don't feel as bad.
I know. It just, yeah, because I didn't have anybody back in the day that was talking about it. And Now it's picking up more and more. But yeah, I mean, you look back now and you're just like, a little bit of regret there. A little bit of regret.
See, and someone's saying that, talking about mining it. Like, I've heard about this.
Yeah, North Koreans mine it.
What? Like.
I don't know, man.
Like, actual, pick and hammer and everything?
Yeah, no, digitally. I think they buy it up is what they're saying.
People that
understand it, you're just going to have to explain this. We are just two morons that don't fully understand it, which is obviously why we don't own any.
I feel like I'm pretty technologically savvy, but.
But it's amazing, man. The conversations that my friends are having, you see it all over the news. You see it all over online with stories. It's just everywhere. It really just is. So, yeah, I got sidetracked today. I'm doing show prep and I'm writing some stuff down. I'm reading an article and all of a sudden this conversation pops up and I'm just sitting there thinking like the last 20 minutes before the show, God, did I just make the dumbest decision not to do something?
Staring blankly at your computer screen like, what have I done?
Got to buy a digital wallet now.
My God.
We got a good show today. No Phil Steele, unfortunately. He had to reschedule to Thursday. His schedule's crazy come bowl season. It changes up, which is why we didn't have him last week and we thought we were going to have him today, but the schedule just didn't pan out. So we'll actually have him Thursday for a half hour. We're going to dive in with Pac-12 bowl game stuff. Oregon's bowl game is this weekend. We'll talk about the playoff, all of that with Phil Steele for a half hour on Thursday. We still have Justin Hopkins. He's going to join us at 1 o'clock for our Ducks roundtable. And I'm hoping he can stick around for two segments because one, I want to talk about the bowl game. Two, I want to touch on recruiting. They had their big weekend. Three, the crystal ball, Arroyo, who else does he know about? And Jim Levitt watch 2017 is still a real thing. So Justin Hopkins will join us at 1 o'clock and we've got our NFL true or false. But I kind of want to start here because I went out, I saw some Christmas lights, got some hot chocolate with the family, did the big family thing last night, right?
I saw that. Yeah, it looked fun.
And then I got home just in time for the Blazer Warrior game. I knew what I was getting into. I walked away more upset. Both a little bit at the city of Portland and at the organization. We'll talk about the Blazers as they fall to the Warriors. We'll kick the show off with that. You got Dirt and Sprague on a Tuesday edition on 1080 The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
You know, I have to fully thank the listeners on this one for most of them being there with us, Joe, of not quite understanding what it is involving cryptocurrency. And some people even a little upset, like, what is this crap? Why are we at this point in our society where we're buying digital stuff and digital money?
It's available. It's an opportunity. I mean,
some people saying, you know what? I had opportunity. Like, this guy says as a rule, I don't invest in things I don't understand, but man, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Very true. And that is smart there.
I mean, I just text during the break with a good buddy of mine named Ray. Shout out to my buddy Ray, who started this whole conversation about just what this means. He says his girlfriend bought him one. And so now we'll just see, does that mean he's going to make tons of money in a year? Is 6 months? We'll see.
You should just like,
I'll keep you up to date on this.
Just give him support all the way through. So if he like does make it big and gets it rich, he'll be like, Brandon, you were always there for me saying to keep the Litecoin, keep it going, baby. Here's a grand.
Now I got $3 million. Here's 10 grand for your troubles.
Yes, exactly.
I'd be okay with that. Thanks, Ray. but hey, I watched the Blazer game last night. I fully expected them to lose. Golden State, by the way, if it says anything, Golden State decided to sit Draymond Green. They didn't need to. They just wanted to sit him. He's got a sore shoulder. Draymond didn't play. Zaza Pachulia didn't play. And Steph Curry has been out. He didn't play. So they're missing three starters. They're the Golden State Warriors. They're still stacked with talent. You have Klay Thompson. You have Kevin Durant. You have Andre Iguodala. You're fine. That game was never really in doubt for them. And again, I'm not sitting here as a guy that was surprised by any of it. I fully expected it. I sat on my couch. And when we talk about Blazers, I try to throw things out the window, right? I try to just be as honest as possible about where I think this team is and where they're going. They've lost five in a row. They now go on the East Coast part of their trip, beginning with Miami. So they may find a couple wins here. And hey, maybe they come back with an over 500 record on this road trip. But there's still something, there's something amiss about this team. There's something I don't trust, nor is it something that I feel very encouraged about. You know, we had Dan Marang on yesterday, BlazersEdge.com, really analytical guy. And I think even to people like that that break all the numbers down and try to find as many stats as possible, there's something this team is missing, whether that's another player on a different team or rotations are wrong or whatever it is. The Blazers just feel like a very weird team. Zach Collins got some good run. Biggie Swanigan couldn't play for whatever reason. Played him at the very end. Shabazz Napier didn't sniff the court, which I still don't really understand that. You're already in a dogfight. You're undersized against Golden State. Throw your best players out there. And I feel like Shabazz Napier is somebody I'd much rather have out there than Jake Layman. And it continues to just be kind of a mystery to me of where this team is at, where they're headed, and who they are. And I was talking with a buddy last night who's been a lifelong Blazer fan. He's a few years older than me, too. And we're going back and forth on this. And, you know, I was just lamenting the fact of growing up for me in this city, what this organization meant and what it was and now where it's at. And I think it's clearly there's something, I don't know if broken would be the right word for it, but there's something they're missing. And I almost wonder, for all the pressure that people put on Stotts and talk about Stotts' job on the line, I'm more pointing the finger at the GM here, the GM bro, as it's known on our station. And you can tell me Stotts, the rotations are maddening and they're not playing this guy, he's not doing this, Myers minutes, and you can give me all that. I won't argue that. You're right. But if you read some of the tea leaves in the NBA, you're starting to get more and more an idea that Terry Stotts' job might be on the line right now. That if this team continues to sputter out, he might be the guy on the chopping block. Usually that's how it is in this league. The team loses, it's the coach's fault. It's not the GMs, it's not the superstars, it's the coach. And I'm a big Terry Stotts guy. I know he's not perfect, but very few coaches in this league are. I think he got a handful of them. He's just on the outside of that. And I think what he can do for a team when they have good talent, we've seen. So I don't look at Stotts in their situation. I do look more at the GM, Neil Olshey, and just where is he leading the organization? And they have critical decisions to make at the end of the year. And the end of the year is so far off at this point, but you can't help but go here a little bit with this team. They're 13-13. They're sitting at 500. They're slipping further down. I believe they're the 7th seed now. And if you want to play the holy crap one way or the other, if you go just by loss column, they're closer to the worst team in the West than they are the best team in the West. So I'm not sitting here saying they're going to tank. They're just not built that way. They never will. But where is this team headed? Because right now, I just don't feel good about it. And I'm looking squarely at the GM, because you can tell me the coach has been inconsistent, but man, if I put you on that hot seat listening right now, if I put you on that sideline, what are you doing? Are you sitting there playing the developmental game? Are you playing Swanigan Collins a ton of minutes with Myers Leonard a ton of minutes? Or are you trying to put the guys who are more ready and can contribute now on the floor more because you have to look after your job and win a ball game here or there? I think there are some things to think about and consider when you think about Terry Stotts and the whole hot seat conversation. Like, his name is right here. I'm looking at an article on Sporting News. Coach is on the hot seat. He's more on the bottom of that, but they are saying if this continues up, there's rumblings more and more. And Dame's having a good year. You know, I tweeted this last night because it was really my only feeling. You walk away from that game and you're sitting there and Dame goes for 39. Like, it wasn't the most efficient night. It wasn't the most amazing night with rebounds and assists. But I turn the channel and I just think to myself, I love watching Damian Lillard play basketball. Is he the perfect player? No, he's not. But he loves our city. He is a star player, multiple-time all-star. He's a good basketball player. He's a guy you want on your team if you're going to be good. And this dude's sitting out here putting up 39, trying to carry the team against the world, the defending world champions. And I'm just sitting on my couch hoping, God, don't let us keep wasting more of his prime years. Don't let this window of prime Lillard, who's having an incredibly efficient year, he's putting up similar numbers. I saw this from one of the Blazers edge writers, similar numbers to what Iverson and Rose did their rookie years when they are not their rookie years, their MVP seasons. Dan Morang, who I mentioned earlier, I mean, you talk about what he's been doing. He's in a rare class by himself with stats. I mean, he found this one yesterday. Since 46-47, there have been 13 players who averaged 26-6-5 in a season. He is one of those players. So the Blazers really just going through it right now, man. And it's frustrating. Because the thing me and my buddy were talking about is, do you get a vibe, Joe? You're younger than me. You and your buddies talk about Blazers all the time. Does it feel like the city more as a whole? I know we have our individual pockets of people who like this guy, like that guy, want this, want that. Does it feel like as a whole the city has accepted mediocrity?
I think since essentially the Odin Roy days when those guys went down, it just kind of felt, you fell back into the Blazers woe was me kind of thing and fell into a few years of no playoffs, got back to the playoffs, but then you would have some discouraging series. The Spurs worked you after you beat the Rockets. That first round against the Grizzlies, they worked you. If it weren't for Chris Paul going down against the Clippers.
Clippers would have beat him, yeah.
Yeah, and then you had a Warriors team who beat you. And then last year, Warriors beat you again. So it's at this point, it's become somewhat draining and exhausting, I think, for some fans to just keep rooting for this team when for, what, 15, 20 years straight, it was playoffs. And now,
when it wasn't just playoffs, it was
competitive,
like,
playoffs.
You talked about contenders. Our organization in this city was one of them. I'm not saying, look, they didn't obviously didn't win a title in those runs, right? With the Drexler Porter days or the Rashid Sabonis days, but
they were in the conversation.
They absolutely were. I mean, they were always going to relive what happened in the Western Conference Finals, and they came close twice against the Pistons in the Bulls. So it wasn't just that they made the playoffs. It was also a mix of, you talked about title contenders. They were a franchise you had to throw out there.
There was a sense of hope. I mean, and in today's NBA landscape, and people talk about it now, it's just like no one sees the Blazers winning a championship. You got a strike in the draft or...
No, they are literally, Joe, they are the definition of NBA purgatory.
Yeah.
They are right smack dab in the middle. And some people just disagree with it. That's fine. It is the worst place to be in this league, and it's not remotely close. Give me suck and hope with the chance of maybe getting the right talent. And I know you can say, well, they had the 10th pick last year, and look what they did with it. Well, let's wait and see a little bit on Collins. I'm not going to sit here and bash Zach Collins. Finally got some minutes. He produced some stuff. He wasn't perfect, but he played okay last night. But that's what the league is built on. You either are or you aren't. And just a meh is maybe the worst feeling. I put a poll question up, too, related to the Blazers. Who do you blame more for the Blazers' woes, Terry Stotts or Neil Olshey? You can find that at Dirt and Sprague. And then the other one, has the city of Portland accepted mediocrity from the team? Your options are yes, when did it start? No, we're all pissed. Or I don't watch the Blazers. Those are your options on Twitter. I'll give you an update on those poll questions and thoughts that are coming in at the Bridge. What is it? What am I blanking on? The text line.
Bridgeport Beers.
Bridgeport Beers. Yeah, sorry. The Bridgeport Beers text line 55305. Read some a few thoughts on that, and then maybe talk a little bit about what happened with the Patriots last night in the AFC playoff picture. Do that next versus Joe with a sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
12:35, welcome back in on The Fan. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday afternoon. I want to talk about Baker Mayfield here in 12 minutes. We didn't touch on that yesterday. I didn't watch the Heisman thing. I told you on Friday I wouldn't. And I think most people, for the most part, just aren't all that interested in it unless there's a regional tie-in. But I heard he gave a great speech. I want to talk more about his pro prospects. He's a very interesting player to think about, especially on the next level. So we'll get to that here in 12 minutes. But we were talking about the Blazers and just kind of where the organization is at, where the city might be. They're not out of it. I'm sure they'll probably still make the playoffs. The bottom of the West is not very good. Oklahoma City can't get it figured out. The Clippers you can't trust. The Grizzlies are in the tank. The Lakers are horrible. The Suns aren't good. Like, I think you can find yourself right there in the 7-8 seed. But again, we'll see, barring injury, where it all shapes up for them in the future. But last night, they lose their fifth in a row. And I just want to read a few thoughts because I'm curious where Blazer fan, how they feel about this organization. Do they think the city is accepting mediocrity? It just, and what I mean by that is not that you're sitting there listening going, yeah, I'm okay with us not being good. What I mean more is just, we had Kevin Arnovitz in here last season, ESPN NBA guy, in studio. And he kind of tied this to Portland in a roundabout way. But he said, look at Memphis. Memphis loves their team. Prior to this season, Memphis has, for the most part, been about a 50-win organization that makes the playoffs but is never really a title contender. And sometimes that's just what you have to accept as your lot in life. Maybe that's Portland now, but I think that was what he was trying to say is Memphis has accepted it. Portland should too. Now, I should note Kevin Arnovitz and Neil Olshey actually have a really good relationship. I don't know if you're ever really going to hear him bash Neil Olshey because of that relationship. But I want to read a few thoughts on this nonetheless. Somebody says at 55305, it's not accepting mediocrity. It's more an aggregate sense of apathy. How many bad moves can a front office make and not learn from them? Can't land a free agent, have missed on some lottery picks, and have gotten in bed with awful contracts over and over again. Somebody else says, I blame Paul Allen. He's the only one who's not willing to go through a rebuild. He fires any GM that tries to convince him that the Blazers need to take a dive. Somebody else with their thoughts, I think I've accepted we will most likely never be great. No significant free agent will ever come here. We have to be great and be lucky in the draft, which we have proven we aren't capable of. Somebody else says, why do we always say wait and see? We've been waiting and seeing for the last 6 years. And that's another thing to think about too, because, you know, Yusuf Nurkic missed another game. He's dealing with an ankle injury. He missed the end of last season after he had such a great start here. He's been a little banged up. And, you know, the old kind of thought with big men in the NBA, once they get banged up, they don't get healthier. You know, that's kind of who they become. I hope that this is just a slight bump in the road and he can come back and play the rest of the season. But, you know, if you're someone like Neil Olshey, he has to think about this. And this is what I'm talking about, is making the moves sometimes that make you unpopular in the moment and are really uncomfortable to do. The Rockets did this. The Rockets made a move this offseason where they went and got an incredible talent in Chris Paul. And we could sit here and all say, well, that's a no-brainer move, Sprague. You're probably right for some, but what was the narrative when Chris Paul got traded to the Rockets or agreed to the sign-and-trade? It was, how are they going to figure that out? Chris Paul dominates the shot clock. James Harden was ball dominant last year. Both have high usage rates. Like, how is this going to work? And it's worked out really well, but that team had won a ton of games last year. They weren't in a position where they necessarily had to make a move, but they're sitting in Houston going, we want to win, and we have a talent like James Harden, who is probably the MVP leader right now. Let's do what we can and take a risk. I admire that in the NBA. I admire GMs that take a risk or understand it the other way. We're nowhere near a championship. One move's not going to solve that. Sell, 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 sell. We're going to build around this with this vision, right? The trust the process type thought. And some cities and some organizations, they really can't wrap their brains around that. Like, it really angers and frustrates them to know their team's actively not trying to win games. Phoenix is doing this year. But because of Devin Booker, they're going to win some games. Obviously, we know about the Sixers and what their process was because we're seeing it play out now with some of their talent. But Olshey's going to have to think about, do I want to give Yusuf Nurkic just fat extension? And are those three going to win you a title? The NBA, to me, should be solely built, and I think the great GMs run it this way, solely built on what is the best title possibility for me. And if you can't walk away convinced 100% or even 90% that Yusuf Nurkic, CJ McCollum, and Damian Lillard are it, that's when you have to have soul searching. That's when you have to consider moves that a lot of the fan base is outraged and frustrated by. But sometimes your job is to not care about that. You have to have the thick skin. We know the GM at times can have thin skin. We've seen that firsthand here on our station. But, you know, you got to look in the mirror sometimes and say, look, it's just, I wish it would work. It doesn't work. This is what we're going to have to do. And then have a plan and execute your plan. And I think the Blazers are really close to being, if not there right now, in that position. Because if I asked you right now to bet your next paycheck on the Blazers winning a title within 2 years, you would never bet yes to that. Even with Yusuf Nurkic. And that's the frustrating part. I just want to get back to what it was when this organization cared about winning and did whatever it took at all costs to win. There's a lot of flack for former GMs of this organization, for guys he brought in. But I'll tell you, man, at least they made efforts to go get the talent. And screw it. We'll take fat Sean Kemp. What if he loses 25 pounds and starts getting a jumper? Huh? He can still jump a little bit. Take that chance. Doesn't work, dump it. You might hold on to it for too long. But again, my larger point, chance, chance, chance. Boston's the same thing. They took a chance. They got a free agent. Now, we can't acquire free agents. I'm well aware of that. But it's just about what are the moves you can possibly make to put this team in a better position. I think the pressure is solely on Neil Olshey. Terry Stotts coaches with what he's given. Develop young talent. Rotate guys. Play guys. Don't play guys. I mean, he only does so much. We've seen that guy win games. We know he's capable of leading a 50-plus win organization. We know that. He didn't lose that. But Neil Olshey, I'm telling you, that's where I'm looking. Just as a sports fan, myself, a Blazer fan, that is where I'm looking. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. The Blazers lose 5 in a row. All right, let's get to some football. Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman, has a great speech. How does he do as an NFL quarterback? How would you project Baker Mayfield as an NFL quarterback? 55305. We'll talk about that next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Coming up in 12 minute Duck fans, we have Justin Hopkins, scoopduck.com, will join us, hopefully for 2 segments. A lot to talk about with our boy Hopkins. As we got the crystal ball hire on Friday, we've got the Arroyo hire official, the extension of his contract as the OC yesterday. The bowl game's coming up. Did you know the bowl game was Saturday? It just kind of creeped up on everybody.
Yeah, I knew it was the 16th, but then I didn't realize it was the 16th, was a Saturday.
I know,
until
I was
this morning.
I was like, oh, yeah, I was talking to our boss, Jeff, Joey, and I was like, oh, well, the Duck bowl game is this weekend. And he goes, is it? And we looked at the schedule. Like, oh, my God, it is. It's Saturday at 12:30.
I think there's like 5 games on Saturday, but the Vegas Bowl definitely being the best of them, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an interesting matchup because some people really like the Ducks' chances there. But, you know, the Boise State Broncos before, we've seen them in bowl games when people don't give them a chance sometimes. They're able to rise to the level of the opponent. So Justin Hopkins will join us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk some Ducks with Justin Hopkins. Baker Mayfield won the Heisman. Did you watch the presentation or did you skip it?
I skipped it. I knew he was going to win. I'm not usually a big, like, oh, got to watch the Heisman presentation, you know. You can catch everything on the internet afterwards anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, if you want to see, I don't know, odds and ends of the speech, it sounds like he got real emotional, which doesn't surprise me. He's such an emotional player on the field. But I wonder not so much about the Heisman or how he's going to do in the playoff. We'll find out, and we'll get to that a little later on in the year. I was thinking about the pro stuff because I was reading an article about him of how scouts are very mixed on him sometimes. And by sometimes, I mean just the last 2 years where they're not fully in. He comes back for another season. And even though he put up monster numbers yet again, it's a very similar thing. Is he a first round talent is what they wonder. And you just, are scouts going to get stuck looking for the prototypical guy? We've seen before in the past, they can, and they make the wrong decisions. We've also seen scouts try to go against the prototypical thing and make the wrong decision. Hence Johnny Manziel. Oh yeah, the young guy, that small guy can play football. Well, no, he can't. Not on the NFL level. But this is almost the Russell Wilson dilemma is what I call it. Because Russell Wilson comes in, not, you know, highly projected to be this stud quarterback, gets the gig, boom, takes off. Now we have Russell Wilson in the league. And because of the way he plays, people are always looking for the next him. I never like that because you only have one Russell Wilson. But when you look at Baker Mayfield, I'm curious if people maybe root against him because they don't like him, or they think that's why he's not going to be good because of the on-field, fiery, kind of cocky attitude. I'm really a big Baker Mayfield fan. I love watching the kid play. I love passion, even when a lot of people don't like it. I love it. Like Philip Rivers yelling on the field. I think Mayfield has a little bit of that.
Love it, yeah.
Well, I mean, he got in trouble, first half suspension or first half benching, whatever it was, for the whole...
Crotch grab.
Yeah, gets the Jayhawks. Jeez. Look, it's not he's not a perfect kid, no doubt. He's young. I really like what he's done. And the numbers are actually very startling. So not saying that he's going to become, because again, I'm not really keen on this. But if you just look at some of these numbers... Russell Wilson's last year in college at Wisconsin, 33 touchdowns, 4 picks. Baker Mayfield, 41 touchdowns, 5 picks. He's thrown it 369 times. Russell Wilson threw it 309. And completion percentage is almost identical. In fact, Baker Mayfield's college career, he's had a better completion percentage. You read the Pro Football Focus stuff, the real in-depth breakdown of players. Baker Mayfield is graded out as the best quarterback in college football the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's one of the most accurate, for sure.
He's great in duress. We've seen him improvise. I think he's got incredible pocket awareness. And he kind of just feels like the quarterback for all the Rosen talk, the Darnold talk, the Allen talk at Wyoming. For all of that, I kind of like tying my hopes or my hot takes, whatever you want to call them, to Baker Mayfield. I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback.
I think he'll be middle of the road. The thing is, and this always, it applies to every player drafted anywhere, is just where they end up going. What team, which quarterback coach, which offensive coordinator. I mean, look at Jared Goff. Obviously, that's just a one-year coach change, and he's a completely different player. Looking at WalterFootball.com, which I trusted this website the last couple of years because they've kind of put me onto Carson Wentz going number two overall.
Yeah.
A long time before anyone else did. And I was like, really? And sure enough, he ended up going number two. And they have him right now going second round to Arizona. Bruce Arians, if he's still coaching, that's not a bad coach to have for to learn under. And then Carson Palmer, again, if he's still there, both pretty old guys there on the team. But Baker Mayfield, I just love the fact that he's an accurate passer. And when he is on the run and he's out of the pocket, in duress, he can make plays. Pressure, it doesn't seem like it gets to him. And obviously just the way he carries himself. Granted, we saw it with Johnny Manziel, how he carried himself on the field. Very cocky, swagger attitude, but... I think Baker Mayfield, as far as football skills goes, he's more accurate, and I mean you can't stop him. I mean, well, the guy is just—it's really pretty incredible to watch. So honestly,
we got a couple people saying, you know, Baker is just Johnny Manziel 2.0. Somebody says he'll be the same. Another one says he is Manziel. Somebody else pointed out this is a good point: Big Ten defenses versus the Big 12. And we saw in the Oklahoma State game, Big 12 defenses at times are pretty flaky, not very good, not as consistent as some of the Big Ten teams. No doubt about that. I'm not sitting here telling you he's going to win multiple Super Bowls or anything, but this debate with him, it's interesting to me. And I really think this is the Russell Wilson conundrum of teams saying, is he kind of the next that? You know, he's listed at 6'1". Realistically, he's probably closer to 5'11". Russell Wilson's about 5'10". I've stood right next to him. They're very close in size. And... he's just going to be one of those players, man, that people either he will succeed or he will not succeed. You'll have some people like you, Joe, middle of the road, not bad, but not this great NFL starter. And that was a poll question I put up at Dirt and Sprague today. Just, you think he's a bust, middle of the road, stud quarterback. And it's just, I think the Baker Mayfield, the dynamic going into the draft with some of those other names and where he is going to end up is incredibly interesting to me. I love watching that kid play.
Most definitely. I love the text machine, though. It's like the comparisons, Johnny Manziel, Doug Flutie. Like, it has to be a small white quarterback that Mayfield will be compared to, you know, because, you know, he's a small white quarterback. So that means he has to be like the other small white quarterbacks in the NFL, right?
Well, and I know, but if somebody's saying, you know, they love the show, but do not compare him to Wilson. I'm not saying he's going to be Russell Wilson. I'm just simply pointing out the Russ and Wilson conundrum has been real for some teams because of the undersized thing. And when you look at some of the college numbers, they're very similar players. They really were. And Wilson had incredible roles. Well, they ended up losing, but he was really good that 1 year at Wisconsin. Not bad at NC State, but upped his play at Wisconsin. And now you got Mayfield back in the playoff 2 out of the last 3 years, and he's going up against a really good Georgia team. And, man, if he lights up Georgia, I think you're just going to flip more and more people to it. But he's an interesting one, man. He's an interesting player to see the way he's going to be viewed by fan media and NFL exec. All right, we have a loaded second hour. There's a ton of stuff to get to, but we're actually going to kick it off with our Ducks Roundtable. Justin Hopkins, ScoopDuck.com, will join us next, Dirt and Sprague Hour 2 on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.